It's Wednesday, May 6th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to this late podcast. Apologize for the lateness of the post. Got a little busy here, and the West Coast news that I had to cover, some stuff that was happening late in the day, plus some taping I had to do for some local stuff here. Got me way behind, and sorry for all you East Coast people that are listening to this the next morning, but glad to have you here. Wanted to give a shout out as well to some folks that are 16 hours off of my time zone, down under at the continent and country of Australia. I've got a guy named Bob who's been emailing me from Queensland, and he's got three people in that area that are ready to start an Australian Normal chapter, and he needs two more in the area of Queensland, Australia. So if you're listening from that area, send me an email at stash@normal.org. We'll see if we can get you hooked up and start a Down Under Normal. Also, don't forget to check the blog at stash.normal.org for all of the stories that we don't have the time to fit into the podcast. There's a great one there with some videotape from a drug bust where they picked up 600 pounds of marijuana, and one of the big bundles of marijuana was written Obama Calderon. I don't know if it was intended to be a delivery or just kind of a thumb in the eye of law enforcement, but that just kind of made me giggle today. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including a look at California's Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger actually opening up the debate for legalization of marijuana. Kudos to the gov. And a report on Homeland Security and a document released and then retracted that declares people like us to be potential terrorists. And another look from the Los Angeles Times at Mexico's drug war, this time the Sinaloa cartel threatening to bring violence over the border into America. And some reefer madness from Minnesota as the head of the Police Chiefs Association chimes in about medical marijuana. Today is our Cannabis Science Day, so we're going to be visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's going to be responding to two posts that we've had up on the stash that have gotten a lot of attention. One was on the cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. This is where people who are longtime tokers suddenly get these vomiting fits that are somehow alleviated by hot showers. We thought it sounded kind of funny, but it turns out a lot of stashers out there have written in the comments saying that this has happened to them. Dr. Mitch will talk about that, as well as another post we had posted where a young woman had been busted for having marijuana metabolites because she was pregnant and they were detected in her baby, and she was charged for that. And a lot of mothers are writing in wanting to know the facts about drug testing and the potential consequences involved in pregnancy there. So Dr. Mitch and I will discuss that as well. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, Tam has the day off as she's producing the results for the Global Marijuana Music Awards. And I want to give a big shout out to our friend Chief Greenbud, who is the winner again for Best Acoustic with his parody song, It's Only a Weed, which is the take on the Plain White Tees song, Hey There Delilah. We'll be playing It's Only a Weed on today's Daily Audio Stash exclusively from Chief Greenbud's newest album. It's really happening, people. Legalization is going to happen in our lifetime. But just in case, try and be healthy so you can live a little longer. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Schwarzenegger says time for debate on legal marijuana. The governor was asked about a recent field poll showing that 56% of registered voters support legalizing and taxing marijuana to raise revenues for a cash-strapped California. Schwarzenegger said, quote, "Well, I think it's not time for that, but I think it's time for a debate. I think all of those ideas of creating extra revenues, I'm always for an open debate on it. And I think we ought to study very carefully what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana and other drugs. What effect did it have on those countries? It could very well be that everyone is happy with that decision, and then we could move to that," Schwarzenegger said of other nations' legalization policies. Continuing, "If not, we shouldn't do it. But just because of raising revenues, we have to be careful not to make mistakes at the same time." End quote. It seems that even the Terminator's home country of Austria has relaxed its laws regarding the Wonder Weed last year. If there is a real debate, then we could have a reasonable hope that Tom Ammiano's bill could both pass and be signed into law. We know what an honest and substantive debate on marijuana legalization would bring. Mexico just took the beginning steps in that direction a few days ago, not to mention Portugal's decriminalization efforts several years ago. "I disagree with the United States position on medical marijuana, so I'm a terrorist?" If this wasn't so damn chilling, it would be laughable. This is from PrisonPlanet.com. A new Homeland Security document that received little attention during last week's swine flu coverage shockingly lists the alternative media with other radical extremist groups and implies that people who disagree with the mass media's version of events are potential domestic terrorists. The official use only document is entitled Domestic Extremism Lexicon and was released on March 26, 2 weeks before the infamous right-wing extremist report that generated so much media attention throughout April. According to WorldNet Daily, the DHS document was almost immediately rescinded, but the groups listed alongside neo-Nazis, Aryan prison gangs, and Black Power extremists again prove that the federal government is targeting American citizens who are merely knowledgeable about their rights and up on current issues as potential domestic terrorists to be treated as a threat to law enforcement. Wow, what the hell happened to our First Amendment rights? They are pretty short and to the point. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition government for a redress of grievances. So now Homeland Security is above the Congress of the United States and the laws that govern this country? This isn't just about weed, it's about everything. That the document was immediately withdrawn is irrelevant. It shows the mindset of them against us. It is systemic and endemic, and it comes from the top. I thought Vice President Biden had the most pressing case of foot and mouth disease, but Department of Homeland Security Secretary Napolitano takes the cake. Our movement places us in four of the categories outlined by the document. Single-issue extremist groups. Groups or individuals who focus on a single issue or cause, such as animal rights, environmental, or anti-abortion extremism, and often employ criminal acts. Group members may be associated with more than one issue. Direct action. Lawful or unlawful acts of civil disobedience, ranging from protests to property destruction, or acts of violence. This term is most often used by single-issue or anarchist extremists to describe their activities. Above ground. A term used to describe extremist groups or individuals who operate overtly and portray themselves as law-abiding. Alternative media. A term used to describe various information sources that provide a forum for interpretation of events and issues that differ radically from those presented in mass media products and outlets. The only piece of good news about this is that the report was ordered by the Bush administration. Perhaps the Obama administration will stop this before the Night of the Long Knives happens here. Mexican Sinaloa cartel may resort to deadly force in the U.S. From the Los Angeles Times. The reputed head of Mexico's Sinaloa drug cartel is threatening a more aggressive stance against competitors and law enforcement north of the border, instructing associates to use deadly force, if needed, to protect increasingly contested trafficking operations, authorities said. Such a move by Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, Mexico's most wanted fugitive, would mark a turn from the cartel's previous position of largely avoiding violent confrontations in the U.S., either with law enforcement officers or rival traffickers. Police and federal agents in Arizona said they had recently received at least two law enforcement alerts focused on Guzman's reported orders that his smugglers should, quote, use their weapons to defend their loads at all costs, end quote. People in America like to use marijuana. Mexican entrepreneurs have succeeded in bringing that marijuana to America through the use of violence. American and Mexican governments retaliate with more violence in Mexico. The Mexican entrepreneurs then retaliate with more violence, this time in America. Then America will retaliate with even more violence. No matter how many people are killed or how much violence we create, however, one thing never changes. People in America like to use marijuana. If we succeed in reducing the Mexican entrepreneur's ability to bring it into America, it will just become more expensive and growing and selling it in America will become more lucrative. But we won't succeed. We can't keep marijuana out of our supermax federal penitentiaries. How exactly will we seal up a 2,000-mile border with Mexico? There is only one way to stop the violence, and that is by legalizing the business. When's the last time bootleggers had a shootout with federal agents over a truckload of whiskey? So far, the contrast has been stark. Near daily violence in the Mexican border towns with relative tranquility on the U.S. side, according to data and interviews with law enforcement officials in the region. For example, Ciudad Juarez has 100 times as many homicides in the 14 months ending in February as neighboring El Paso, which is roughly half its size. In 2008, Nogales in Mexico's Sonora state had 40 times as many homicides as Nogales, Arizona, which is roughly one-ninth as populous. Deeper into the United States, narcotics agents say they have seen little evidence of spillover from Mexican drug war violence beyond an increase in ransom kidnappings related to collection of drug debts. But near the Mexico-Arizona border, Robert W. Gilbert, chief patrol agent for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection's Tucson sector, said confrontations between law enforcement and suspected traffickers, and among traffickers themselves, had grown more violent. A shootout occurred several weeks ago when one group allegedly tried to hijack another's load of drugs on one of the main roads leading north to Phoenix. Two of the suspected traffickers were wounded. When authorities stopped a vehicle in Douglas, Arizona several weeks ago, traffickers on the Mexican side of the border laid down suppressive fire to stop U.S. officials from advancing, enabling the vehicle to make it back across the border with a load of marijuana intact, one Immigration and Customs Enforcement official said in an interview. Doesn't anybody read an American history book anymore? Look up the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Minnesota Police's Reefer Madness Over Medical Marijuana. Dennis J. Flaherty, the executive director and chief lobbyist of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, has a few things to say about the proposed medical marijuana law in Minnesota.
The proposal gives the Commissioner of Health the sole responsibility to regulate this new bureaucracy and excludes the Commissioner of Public Safety with any oversight role. The very agency best suited to help regulate this new industry will be sidelined.
Wait a minute. You mean the Commissioner of Health will be managing the medical marijuana program? Of course, Mr. Flaherty thinks the Commissioner of Public Safety, law enforcement, should oversee medical marijuana because of the extensive medical training one receives with a criminal justice degree. I'm sure Mr. Flaherty wouldn't object if we turned over the offices of parole and probation to the Commissioner of Health.
The proposal does not limit the use of marijuana to treating patients confronting a terminal illness, but instead would allow many to access it, including for the treatment of pain. Don't believe that it is designed only for those that are in the final stages of their life, finding some relief from a joint. That is not what the bill says.
And yet, the people of Minnesota support medical marijuana by almost a 2-to-1 margin. 75% among Democrats, 72% for independents, and even 53% from Republicans. All breakdowns by gender, age, race, party, ideology, and region show majority support for medical marijuana, except western Minnesota, where the support drops down to 48%. But with a plus or minus 4.3% margin of error, maybe even they support it. These opponents keep trying to frame medical marijuana as if we're scamming people. The idea is that we fool the public by saying medical marijuana will help the cancer patient who's 6 weeks from death, while surreptitiously adding language that allows medical marijuana for hangnails and halitosis. But the fact is that after 13 medical marijuana states on the books, the people know that it is for pain and nausea, spasticity and seizures, glaucoma and gastrointestinal disorders, and they accept medical marijuana anyway. Assuming that after a dozen years of medical marijuana laws, the people are somehow being fooled is an insult to the intelligence of the people Mr. Flaherty serves and protects.
The facts are that marijuana is a drug that is associated with violent crimes such as robberies and assaults. Many have and will resort to almost anything to get their hands on it. Families and caregivers of the sick could easily become victims of yet another illness called crime.
No, prohibition is a policy that is associated with violent crimes. It makes marijuana worth $3,000 per pound, which is the only allure for criminal robberies of it. They're not stealing weed because of some intense withdrawal symptoms and craving for the chronic. If you're worried about sick people being crime victims over prohibited marijuana, just legalize it so healthy adults can buy it like alcohol. You don't hear of home robberies of people's liquor cabinets, do you?
Legalizing it for medical purposes will create a perception among many, especially our children, that marijuana is a good thing, when we all know that it is not. It is the most widely abused controlled substance in our state.
Most widely used controlled substance. Using marijuana is not drug abuse. For many purposes, marijuana is a good thing. And when 13 states made it legal for medical purposes, teen use of marijuana dropped in all those states with measurable data.
Law enforcement and prosecutors have paraded before committees of the legislature where this proposal was heard, consistently telling our policymakers that the proposal was seriously flawed and how it would have a dramatic effect on drug business in our state. They pointed out flaw after flaw from a public safety standpoint, the very things they are the experts on. They did not challenge the total lack of medical science to support that marijuana has any medicinal qualities, or that doctors can prescribe many other legal drugs to address the pain people with debilitating diseases normally encounter.
Yeah, because they'd be laughed out of the hearing room by people with glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, cancer, GI disorders, and chronic pain. Then they'd have to hear how those other legal drugs don't work as well and cause constipation, depression, sexual dysfunction, nausea, insomnia, inability to function through an opioid haze, and are poisonous to the liver. Then they'd have to hear how much those other legal drugs cost compared to a weed you can grow in your basement.
It is difficult for me to predict the outcome of how the legislature handles this. I can tell you simply to ask any cop you know, and the decision is an easy one for them. They would tell you they should vote it down. If they had the chance to be in St. Paul, they would tell the legislature the very same thing that their colleagues have been saying at each committee.
Which is, don't make our job so hard! Now we can just lock up any person with pot we catch and seize their cash and property, no questions asked. If you legalize medical use, we won't be able to arrest sick people anymore for using marijuana. We'll have to do actual detective work and determine whether a law has been broken. We might even have enough time left over to force us to go after real criminals who might try to resist us.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. We've reached the middle of the week again, and it's time for more of our cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who joins us every Wednesday by telephone from New York. And Dr. Earlywine, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm glad you're here because we wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of topics we've covered in the past, and we've had these up on the stash, and lo and behold, they've gotten quite a lot of attention from our readers. First of all, I'd like to talk about this cannabis or cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome. This was a story we reported on where it was reported that a small subset of people who use cannabis chronically end up having these terrible vomiting fits, and then hot showers seem to cure them. So we thought that was a little strange when we first talked about it, but turns out a lot of our listeners say they really do have this problem. And so I was wondering if you found out any more information about this cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome.
So, in fact, we now have, it looks like, 19 cases based on some things I've been digging around in. So something's clearly going on. And my first thought was, oh, it must be contaminated cannabis, some crazy fertilizer or something else is making this happen to folks sometimes and not others. And that is still one line I'd like to pursue, because I noticed, at least in the published work, there isn't a report on whether or not the person was using a new strain of cannabis or had recently purchased some new cannabis right before this happened. Nevertheless, my growing friend suggests that unless somebody's doing something really inane, this shouldn't be a big issue. Then my pharmacology consultants essentially said that there are a whole host of substances where you can essentially get the opposite effect of what you usually get, depending upon length of exposure and a number of individual differences in the individual. The fact that the hot showers works inspired a long lecture on the way nausea seems to function, and the cannabinoid system is definitely involved. In part, why cannabis may be such an effective antiemetic, why it keeps people from vomiting, may also be, in some ways, the same reason why low doses in a subset of folks after long-term use could actually create the opposite effect, because the way their cannabinoid system essentially sensitizes over the years. I said, oh, come on, but what should these poor people do? And they essentially said a month off and going back to it, particularly if they have a suspect strain using a different strain, they could experiment with small doses and see what happens. But bottom line was, hey, maybe cannabis isn't for them anymore. And I think that that's an interesting message from the plant, if you will.
Yeah. You know, I had thought about this, too, after I started seeing the comments appearing on the Stash blog. I got to thinking that it might have something to do with the internal regulation of our own endocannabinoid system and how that might affect how we deal with nausea. Is that the basic idea here?
Exactly. And in fact, you know, the human body is very plastic. So if you've had long-term steady exposure to an external source of cannabis, you could imagine how the receptors would either change in sensitivity or even decrease in number in certain areas. And that might be part of what's going on here. But, you know, as you can imagine, because this is so rare, we don't have a lot of literature on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds pretty rare. I've been around the cannabis community for years and had never heard of such a thing. And I know and talk to a lot of people, so it caught me by surprise.
I want to point out that we can't completely rule out chance. You know, 100 million people worldwide are using cannabis, and 19 people have thrown up as a result. It's distinctly possible that with numbers that big, that this could have happened by chance, and I don't want to, you know, pretend like I'm some kind of statistical fool when I make a big deal out of 19 cases. And as you can imagine, if 19 people who smoked cannabis won the Nobel Prize, we wouldn't be running around saying cannabis is the way to win the Nobel Prize.
Right. So how would scientists go about trying to study something like this, especially considering how difficult it is to get marijuana for research purposes?
Well, in fact, anytime anything is this rare, what you end up having to do is very long-term studies with multiple sites and a lot of investigators converging on it. So what I'm hoping is that anybody who is basically dealing with nausea and vomiting in the emergency room setting or any other medical setting would be at least wise to this and be willing to write up reports going in either direction. So not just, oh, I found somebody who throws up all the time who does smoke pot, but in fact, here's somebody who's got hyperemesis and has never been near cannabis. Because that's a much better way for us to really determine any potential causal role of cannabis in this condition. And by all means, anybody who's got this, it sounds really aversive, and I mean, it sounds like, oh, no big deal, you just hop in a hot shower, but it really is awful, the uncontrolled vomiting, and I would hope that they'd, jump right to a physician. There are a number of anti-nausea drugs that aren't cannabinoids that are extremely effective.
Yeah, and if some of those people out there who were reading the Stash and commented on this could send your stories to Dr. Erlewine at 420research@gmail.com, maybe that'll help us build up some case studies here.
That would be a big help to me.
All right. Well, another post that got a lot of attention had to do with just a typical police blotter post that I post all the time. This one happened to be in Florida, and a mother who was booked because her infant tested positive for THC, and she was booked for, I think it was child endangerment or abuse or something like that. And that prompted a lot of pregnant women writing into the blog with their comments and questions about how this drug testing is done for infants. I had one person even saying that they test the infant's stool at birth and determine every single drug the mother ever did during pregnancy. So I thought this might be a good prime target for some debunking and some information for pregnant mothers out there who might be using cannabis. And anything you could tell us about that?
Absolutely. First and foremost, I gotta be candid when I say that Americans in particular really freak out when anything has to do with babies. And that's sort of been crazy justification for the drug war for literally decades, so I don't want to overstate any of these cases. Mary Lynn Mothry has some impressive data gathered in the Caribbean of women who used cannabis teas or even smoked cannabis, and their babies turned out just fine. Again, because, you know, we just don't know on a whole lot of these things. Of course, pregnant women shouldn't use any psychoactive drugs, just as a rule. Nevertheless, how are these tested? Well, they can do standard urine screens and test baby stool for presence of drug metabolites. The stool does not reveal 9 months worth of evidence. In fact, babies don't form stools for 9 months inside the body, so it's not the same kind of issue at all. But they also often will screen the urine of the mother, and that's what can be particularly revealing, particularly if you've used cannabis in the last month or so. Again, this isn't recommended. If you are experiencing nausea and vomiting related to pregnancy, there are alternative approaches rather than cannabis to keep that down, despite some pretty compelling evidence we've got from Canada suggesting that a number of mothers do turn to cannabis to fight nausea and vomiting in pregnancy. So we're kind of stuck here. Now, the fact that a woman can be put basically at risk for legal repercussions because of what's in her urine at delivery is unfortunate, because this is actually turning people away from prenatal care and appropriate delivery options. And so I really want to encourage everyone who's involved with this to make recommendations for treatment or something along those lines, because there is absolutely no reason to frighten women away from proper prenatal care and good delivery options for fear of some kind of negative repercussions because of drug use that may be beyond their control.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at these laws and why we have these in place, of course, we're trying to prevent or trying to protect, you know, the newborn children. And we had that crack baby scare of the 80s that turned out to be, you know, fraudulent. And we had all these other scares about other drugs. And it seems to be that just kind of carries over into the marijuana when we take something like alcohol or tobacco and we see much bigger harms for infants, for mothers that use those drugs.
Tobacco decreases the baby's head size, lowers birth weight, is a real disaster when it comes to pregnancy. And so I feel like there'd be a much stronger case for putting out a lot of public service announcements and making sure that women who are pregnant don't use tobacco than these sort of backhanded ways of trying to essentially imprison women for using cannabis, which, you know, the data don't suggest has the same impact at all.
Yeah, and yet, you know, for the tobacco use, no one's testing mothers for their use of tobacco or taking away their children or locking the mothers up or punishing them in any way for their use of tobacco. So it seems quite unfair to me.
Oh, I'm sorry to say that a big Hollywood actress actually announced that she was pregnant and was so glad because 2 months into the pregnancy, she'd finally quit smoking. And she said this in public, like this was in the news.
Yeah.
So it's clear we do not have the stigma around that that might be more appropriate.
So for the readers out there, the women who may be pregnant, either, you know, depending what stage of pregnancy they may be in, first, second, or third trimester, should we be telling them to just avoid the use of cannabis for because of the testing reasons or because of the health reasons or a little of both?
I feel like the health data, the information is not overwhelming, but we're in a culture where if you say anything that might be the least bit risky related to pregnancy, people just freak out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly something that needs more investigation, but right now the way to err is on the conservative side. I feel like the testing may not be as rampant as some folks have suggested, say on the internet, but still a genuine risk. And if you're in a state where the laws suggest that this could actually put you at risk for legal repercussions, it's a shame, but you really do need to abstain. And it's probably a good idea anyway. I should add, too, that the data on breastfeeding and cannabis are pretty much suggestive that it's not a good habit to smoke cannabis during breastfeeding. Even if you pump and dump, as they say, it's just not the kind of thing that's going to turn out well for an infant. So this is a time of life to, you know, basically abstain for a while and appreciate all the other wonders of having a new baby.
Yeah. And another sad aspect of this too is looking at this statistically, we find that women of color and of lower socioeconomic status also tend to get these charges of child abuse and these drug testing done at a much greater interval than other women. So just another sad aspect of our war on drugs.
Oh, and I find that so disheartening. It's truly consistent with the evidence that these tests aren't done at random. And if you're at a public hospital or a hospital that's essentially providing assistance for your pregnancy or delivery, you're at much higher risk for having these tests run. Mm.
Well, this is why I like reporting on these stories and getting the input from the readers at the Stash, because sometimes they help to take us into another direction of inquiry. And it's been very interesting for me to learn. And I'm sure, Dr. Earlywine, you were quite surprised at some of the cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome information.
Oh, the Stash listeners are always keeping my eyes open.
All right. Send your questions in to Dr. Earlywine at 420research@gmail.com, or you can forward them to me at stash@normal.org, and we'll get them asked here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for debunking some of this stuff for us and filling us with our weekly dose of cannabis science.
Thank you, Russ.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. We're taking a break from the usual Reggae Wednesday today. Tam is out at the Global Marijuana Music Awards, and I'll be supplying the tunes for today. Much fun was had and much Greenbud was chiefed when my favorite 420-friendly country stoner, Chief Greenbud, flew in from Nashville to march, perform, and party with Oregon Normal at the Global Cannabis March in Portland, Oregon. He may even remember some of it. I remember the first song of his I ever heard, which is today's choice for our Daily Toker tune, his parody cover of the Plain White Tees song, Hey There Delilah, called It's Only a Weed. I'm so out of touch with modern music that I didn't even know it was a cover.
but I fell instantly for the lyrics that tell the story of far too many of our brothers and sisters have experienced getting busted for a weed. As I go to press tonight, Tam has released the winners in the 2009 Global Marijuana Music Awards, and I'm proud to say the Chief has won once again for Best Acoustic with this song, It's Only a Weed.
Hello, Mr. Officer, and how are you this evening? You say that you're smelling something that you don't find very pleasing. Could it be the fact that I've been smoking weed? Yes, indeed. Yes, sir, Mr. Officer, I've got my hands behind me. Please don't use any more pepper spray, 'cause that last shot was blinding, I can't see. And it's getting hard to breathe. I'm in custody. Oh, it's only a weed. 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 It's only a weed. Hello, Mom and Dad, it seems I've got a little problem. The policeman thinks I'm dealing, and it's prison time he's talking. Could you please call an attorney just for me? I'm in need. Hey, public defender, when's my case going to trial? 'Cause I couldn't make my bond, and I've been in jail a while and lost my job, all for a quarter pound of pot. Ain't that a crock? Oh, it's only a weed. 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 It's only a weed. Well, prison life is really hard, but when they let us in the yard, there's a man named Bubba looking out for me. He says that I'm pretty cute, but I feel like I'm being used. There's just got to be a better way, 'cause I'm not gay. Hey, future employer man, there's something I must tell you, 'cause when you run all my numbers, well, you're gonna find my record. I did time. Having marijuana is a crime. I wish they'd have an open mind. It's not a crime. Oh, it's only a weed. 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 It's only a weed.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at normal, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with some phone numbers that you should have programmed into your cell phone. Call them often. First of all, President Barack Obama's phone number is 202-456-1111. The Congressional Switchboard phone number is 202-224-3121. And Attorney General Eric Holder is 202-353-1555. If you didn't get those numbers, stop your iPod and rewind it and listen to them again. Thanks for downloading the Daily Audio Stash. We're having tons of fun here as we fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. The summer's just getting started, all the amazing hemp fests and activities that are happening, and we'll be reporting on them for you here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.